Hello and welcome to Metaphorically Speaking with Delia Delore, the podcast where we dive into popular mottos, mantras and metaphors, exploring their origins and their meaning and impact on the world. Each week, our phrase is chosen by a special guest because of the particular resonance it has with their life and experiences. The thing that I cherish the most about life experiences is learning from them. And I think far too often, too many people don't learn from them. They just go through the experiences and then make the same decisions again. And sometimes they don't even recognize that they're doing the same thing again. And then if they do recognize it, they think that they will overcome it without even thinking about why it went wrong in the first place. Now, I say all this because it ties in loosely with our metaphor. The guest who is on the show this week has been with us before. And I always feel that I don't like to just introduce you to people and then you don't hear from them again. I think it's always nice to kind of go back and see what that person was up to. So a part of her being here today is that, and another part of it is because of her chosen metaphor, of course. You may be familiar with the phrase, life's a bitch. But the rubbed salt in the wound you may not have heard before is that, and then you die. At least that's according to this week's phrase given to us by linguist Karen Stolznow. Because life's a bitch and then you die. Life's a bitch and then you die. That's why we get high, because you never know when you're going to go. Life's a bitch and then you die. That's why we puff lie, because you never know when you're going to go. Life's a bitch and then you die. That's why we get high, because you never know when you're going to go. That's right. Our phrase for this week is life's a bitch and then you die. If that sounds a bit depressing for you, then stick around as we uncover the shining hope in the depths of this dark phrase. A young expression compared to the metaphors we often have on the show, the phrase life's a bitch only appears in text in 1940 in Langston Hughes' autobiographical novel, The Big Sea. A possibly homosexual African-American writer and activist in the early 20th century, he certainly had enough reasons to think as such. Coming from a family of abolitionists, Langston was estranged from his father, had his heart broken by a well-to-do Gold Coastian before becoming a key figure in the Harlem Renaissance. Speaking on the pain and consequences of a life without progress or release, here is his short poem, Dream Deferred.
What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat, or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode?
Even so, for all Langston endured, his phrase didn't grow its nihilistic addendum until 1982, when the Washington Post asked a 15-year-old Tony Daniels the meaning of life. His answer? Life's a bitch, and then you die. It's not clear whether he was quoting something he had heard or if he came up with it on the spot. Either way, the meaning is clear. There's nothing to look forward to but suffering. To extrapolate further, there is no purpose to life. There is no great cosmic order. I'm here now. I won't be later. And that's about as deep as it goes. This skepticism towards the prevailing narrative of the day can be traced all the way back to Gorgias, the original skeptic and an ancient Greek philosopher. He argued that nothing exists, and even if it did, we puny humans can neither meaningfully talk about it nor understand it. Our phrase and the nihilistic worldview it represents is questioning the comforting narratives about karma and justice in the afterlife.
You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
that you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind.
Just as nihilism is associated with skepticism, it also has a reputation as going hand in hand with hedonism. After all, if there is no moral framework to the universe and nothing to gain in the afterlife from abstinence and restraint, then why not fill every waking moment with short-term pleasure without a concern for long-term consequences? At first glance, this link might seem self-evident. In Weimar Germany, between the two world wars, as dreams of a German empire turned to a nightmare of hyperinflation, radicalization, and destitution, a culture of hedonistic nihilism took over much of Berlin.
Let lightning flashes rage outside. We snort and we inject. Let drowsy morphine take its subcutaneous effect upon our nervous system. We snort and we inject. Euphoria awaits us, and though, as we suspect, our foes can't wait to shoot us down, we snort and we inject. And if we snort ourselves to death or into the asylum, our days are going downhill fast. How better to beguile them? Europe's a madhouse anyway. No need for genuflecting. The only way to paradise is snorting and injecting.
It can and has been argued the apathy that was either cause or product of this nihilism paved the way for the Nazi takeover of Germany in 1934. But not all nihilists are apathetic, and our phrase can be a source of strength and hope just as easily as it can depress and fatigue. Now, time to hear more about the metaphor, life's a bitch, but then you die, which was suffixed by our guest, Australian-American author and doctor of linguistics, Karen Stolznow. Karen, welcome back to Metaphorically Speaking.
Thank you for having me back.
And thank you for being such a supporter of Metaphorically Speaking. Through the year, over the years, you're always there liking our posts and just being there. So thank you.
Oh, I love what you do.
Well, I get very interesting metaphors to discuss, such as yours. Mm. So your metaphor, life is a bitch and then you die. This is very important to you because...
Let me just start by saying it's because of the B word that's in there, it seems a little harsh. So I was surprised and pleased that you were happy for me to go with this this metaphor or idiom on the show. So I think it means a lot of things to me and a lot of things to lots of people. I think the original saying was life's a bitch, and the extended version is life's a bitch and then you die. So I think it's a kind of resigned acceptance that life is hard and unfair. Life is difficult. It's very tough. And then there's no real reward at the end of it. The final insult is that we die. The phrase is really lamenting that life is this cruel struggle and before you know it, it's over and that there's no payoff. So it's a very popular phrase and I hear it a lot. I think it's something that resonates with me. It's a phrase that resonates with a lot of people and it's included in an upcoming book that I have as well. So there are lots of different angles for this phrase and why it's important to me.
How does the metaphor resonate with you?
Well, I think it's the kind of phrase that does resonate with everyone. We've heard this phrase for quite some time. The extended version, life's a bitch and then you die. It's about the resigned acceptance that life is hard and it's unfair, it's difficult and it's tough, but there's no reward at the end of it. The final insult is death. The expression really laments that life is a struggle, but before you know it, it's over and there's no payoff. So how does it resonate with me? I really think that it applies to everyone and everyone, well, most people anyway, people get frustrated with their experiences in life and think, is this worth it? I would say that some people, it might not resonate with as much for truly privileged people. There's a funny story about the British royal family when Queen Elizabeth was still alive. Prince Harry as he was then at the time, once gave his grandmother a shower cap that was embroidered with the words, "Ain't life a bitch." So that's funny because obviously that doesn't apply to her. But I think it just really resonates with people because it talks about the inevitable difficulty and pain and suffering and misfortune of existence. So you've got a lot of kind of counter examples too, where people will talk about ain't life grand, or life is good, or life's a peach, life's a beach as well. So you have those positive spins on the same term.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking whilst you were talking about how to make it positive, because a lot of metaphors, they started off trying to be positive, trying to set examples. Then they began to be seen as negative. And I find modern day, we try again to balance the metaphors so that ultimately, even though the main story or outline of why the person is saying it may seem negative, we try to twist it so that it becomes positive. Now, when we say life is a bitch, if we have to, how can I put it? It's like, how do you put side by side the metaphor? Life is what you make it. So let's look at this metaphor, life is what you make it, and life is a bitch. Do you see any similarities in those two metaphors?
Well, I think if you look at the history of the term life's a bitch, it does go back to other languages like French back to the 1800s. But there was an early use in English by an author called Langston Hughes. And he wrote an autobiography in 1940 called The Big C. And he writes about a particular character who says, life's a bitch, but you can beat it if you try. So that's a little bit more of a positive slant on that. I think that you've got lots of other mottos in life that complain that life is hard and it's rough and it sucks. A phrase like Murphy's Law too, the adage meaning that what can go wrong will go wrong. So I think you've got both sides of the coin, that people talk about the suffering and pain of life, but also there's this kind of resilience and this positivity about life and an optimism with other phrases.
When I hear of life's a bitch, I wouldn't have put it among one of the most popular metaphors that I hear people talk about. And I wonder why, because it is so real. It's not like other metaphors. This one is quite direct.
Oh, it is. I think because of the word bitch in it, the B word. I think that there are lots of other similar mottos out there, people complaining that life is hard, life is rough, life sucks. Even talking about Murphy's Law, I think there are some similarities with that saying there, that what can go wrong will go wrong. And even other phrases like payback's a bitch and karma's a bitch. But I think life's a bitch really sums up how difficult life can be and pain and suffering that we go through.
And when you were writing your book, did you feel that the research that you found whilst putting the book together, was there anything that you found alarming that could be misconstrued as to be something, I wouldn't say negative, but something that people would not have thought about unless they had researched the term?
Well, the word has a very long history. So I'm sure a lot of people would think, oh, it's probably been around for a while. It's a popular word today. It's an everyday word for a lot of people. But it has this long history, this long pedigree, I like to say, because the original meaning was a female dog. And I think it was very shocking and startling to see the progression of the word and how it was used. I looked at old literature and manuscripts that used the term, and I came across books of folkloric medicine that would talk about bitch's urine and bitch's milk and how this would be used to soothe a baby's teething troubles or used to cure warts and things like that. So just the magical ways that this word was used. And then to find out just this long history of the term and the etymology, which means the word's origins. Because it was related to females and dogs, it became an insult for women pretty quickly, but it also became an insult for men, and it was used in other ways to refer to women's sexuality. So I think it was a kind of metaphor based on the bitch in heat. and a reference to a horny woman, a woman who was aroused, or a woman who had lots of children. So it was used in a sexual sense and used much like whore has been used or is used today. So that was very interesting to see the different uses of the term. Now, the word's really exploded today. I came across over 100 different meanings and uses of the word. So it's obviously used as a noun. It's also used as an adjective. It's used as a verb or an exclamation, and it can refer to a woman or to a man. It can refer to a dog or even a thing. We can talk about something being a bitch of a thing, something that's difficult and troublesome. So it's just such an interesting and flexible word and a real chameleon.
As a linguistic, you can tell us about the meanings of these words. Now, when we look at the word bitch, it feels a very negative word. Is it?
Well, that's a really good observation, because the word has been around for a very long time, over 1,000 years. But originally, it had the literal meaning of a female dog. So in and of itself, originally, the word wasn't offensive. But then over the centuries, it became associated with sexism. It became an insult for women and also for men around the same time. So nowadays, when we hear that term, I think it really goes back to when you hear a word that has multiple meanings, we tend to hear the most offensive meaning of that word or the most offensive sense. So if I say bitch, a lot of people think, oh, I'm saying something terrible about a woman. That's the dominant sense that we think of. But certainly it's a very prolific word. It appears in hundreds of different sayings and expressions, and it's morphed and changed so much over the centuries that it has lots of different meanings. But certainly in and of itself, just hearing the phrase, we think, oh, it's a slur, it's sexist, and it's a bad word. But it's an everyday word. We hear it all the time. We see it online. We hear it in the streets. The word is everywhere.
I've tried to imagine that word having a positive meaning, or even within slang, to make someone think something different of it. And I just can't see it happening. So, for example, the word sick. Sick, you're thinking, you know, S-I-C-K, you're thinking someone is ill or unwell. But in the UK, this word sick, which they're spelling S-I-C, actually means good, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. We see that kind of opposition of meaning a lot, even with words like bad. And we see that a lot with the word bitch. You can be a good bitch, but you can be a bad bitch, but a bad bitch can have positive connotations.
Definitely.
I think everyone's got an opinion on this word. A lot of people won't use it. Other people think that it's very benign and innocuous. Of course, there have been efforts to reclaim the word since the second wave of feminism. And you had the Bitch Manifesto by Joreen. People have tried to take the word back and to use it in a positive way, in much the same way that a word like gay or queer have been taken back. So you really have all different kinds of perspectives on the word.
And to associate it with a woman who's powerful and independent and strong. So I think to this day, you have people who are still trying to reappropriate that word, to use it in a positive sense. A lot of musicians and artists and successful women will say, oh, I'm a bitch because it means I'm a powerful woman. But then you certainly have other women out there who say, I don't use that word, don't associate that with me, I'm not a bitch. So we will have a personal interpretation of the word and what it means to us. Just a very powerful reaction to the word, whether we embrace it or whether we reject it. It's a very potent and powerful word.
When I think of the word in the term that it's used, I could, if I were a feminist, say that masculinity is on the rise here, and they've attached life and bitch to Eve and woman. Would that make sense to you?
Yes, I think, you know, in some ways, some people will use the word bitch as a synonym for a woman. You find that a lot in hip hop music where they're used in the same way. And some dictionaries, until quite recently, would use the word bitch as a synonym for women. So it is predominantly associated with women, but you certainly have instances where it's used against men. So in my research, I found it's been used against men probably as long as it's been used against women, and it's used differently. It's used to basically present a man as being effeminate and to reduce him to the status of a woman. So it's a very sexist word, whether it's used against women or whether it's used against men, it has those sexist connotations. But again, it really depends on the context, because it can be used in so many different ways. And when you use a phrase like life's a bitch, you're not talking about a woman. You're not talking about a man. You're talking about a thing. And often people will talk about things being bitches that are bad in their lives, like a disease or war, or obviously in this case, life, just suggesting that it's something that needs to be controlled or dominated in some way.
And, you know, people who want to use it in a positive way to refer to a woman who's powerful and strong. But I think at its core, it is seen as an insult. When people think of the word bitch, they don't really think of a female dog unless they're a vet or a breeder. Most people would think, oh, that's an insult for a bad woman.
Why did you think that you had to go ahead and research the word? And of course, you were thinking of writing a book. At that time, did you think that the word was going to be part of that title and that the word was going to be solely what the book was about?
That's a good question. And originally, I envisioned a much smaller volume. I thought, how much can you write about a single word? And I have been inspired by other books. There are other books out there about the F word. So certainly the B word, bitch, is just a very important and salient term in the English language. And so I thought it would be interesting for someone to write about this word and to research it. But I didn't know how rich and colourful the history was going to be of the word and how much I would find and uncover about the word. So this is an actual book-long book. It's about 65,000 words. And there was just so much that I've discovered about the word. But originally I thought, oh, this is just going to be maybe an essay, just something, a very slim book or volume. And I've just been really excited as well to uncover so much about the word that people don't think of day to day when they use it.
So what kind of reader are you looking for?
Oh, well, the first time I was on this show, I was talking about my other book, On the Offensive, and that was about racism, it was about sexism and all the different isms. And so I think that this is a kind of corollary to that book. It really follows on from that book and writing about prejudice and discrimination in language. So originally I had an angle of writing about the sexism associated with the word and writing about feminism and the relationship between the word and the history of feminism. But it's become so much more than that. I've unearthed a lot about history and popular culture and its modern use and even where the word is going in the future. So I think that this book is for anyone who likes books about sexism and feminism and prejudice and language, but also people who are just intrigued by this word. The book is getting published through Cambridge University Press, and I was very excited that they wanted to use the word in the title of the book, because I thought, oh, they're going to censor it somehow, because the word has been censored on and off a lot over the centuries. So I thought they're going to censor it. They're not going to use that in the title, but there it is, big and bold in the title. So I really think that this is a book for anyone who's just interested in language or swear words and slurs and insults, and who just wonders about this word that we use every day in so many different ways. It really does open your eyes to the word and just how much substance it has. It's just a lot more than an insult.
Did your research uncover something that surprised you?
Lots of different things. One thing that I found interesting about the word is that the original insult towards women actually came about with it being associated with prostitution. So bitch was originally a kind of synonym for the word whore or a harlot. So going back to the 1300s, the 1400s, bitch was a word for a promiscuous woman or for a whore. And then it just became a more generalized insult for women. So I thought that that was really interesting. I also thought it was interesting that it's been used as an insult for men as long as it's been used as a slur against women. I think just looking at the history of the word, that it's been around for so long, it's been around longer than a lot of other insults out there, like the C word and the F word. It has really stood the test of time and it's changed so much. And I think that that's really interesting. A lot of words just drop out of use. We stop using them, they disappear, meanings can shift and change and do all kinds of things. And bitch has just had this really interesting trajectory where it's become so popular, especially in the last maybe 50 years or so. It's stuck around where other words have just fallen by the wayside. Yeah, there are just a lot of really interesting tidbits of history and the way the word is used, the way the word's been used in music and popular culture. I was just constantly surprised with the things that I found out.
Of all the words that you could choose to put together, you chose to write about life is a bitch. Was there any particular reason why?
Well, I think it just really resonates with people. And it's a phrase that's been around for a long time. I think it really epitomizes that my book, I've written an entire book on a single word. And I think that that's just a good common everyday term that people really like to use. So I thought it just was a good metaphor for the book, for my life, for everyone's lives. But it can have a negative slant, obviously, but you can also look on the bright side of things, have a positive slant on similar terms and to look at it in a positive way.
Well, the title certainly does catch the eye. And when you hear it out loud, you think, wow, okay, I wonder what that is about. And how can we find your book?
So the book is coming out early this year. It should be available by about April or May. But I think at this point, you'll be able to find it listed on Amazon for pre-order. It'll be available through various outlets, wherever you like to buy your books from. Just ask for it.
Lovely. Well, Karen, thank you so much for yet another fascinating look to a fascinating word. Of course, being female, it intrigued me even more to discover what you've written. So I'll be keeping my eyes open for it. But thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Delia. It was a pleasure.
Well, what a fascinating interview that was. But it's not over yet, as we return to our phrase, life's a bitch and then you die. We've touched on how this phrase is ultimately an expression of nihilism. It questions if things will really work out in the end and whether selfless acts really pay dividends in the afterlife. We explored as well how this can be seen as leading to hedonism and apathy towards the future and one's own obligation to the world around us.
It's quite a lovely Jackson Pollock, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
What does it say to you?
It restates the negativeness of the universe, the hideous, lonely emptiness of existence, nothingness, the predicament of man forced to live in a barren, godless eternity, like a tiny flame flickering in an immense void with nothing but waste, horror, and degradation, forming a useless, bleak straitjacket in a black, absurd cosmos.
What are you doing Saturday night?
Committing suicide.
What about Friday night?
And yet, despite the existential despair and apathy you might expect from such an outlook, ask a group of climate activists if they believe in God, a higher purpose or objective moral truths, and you likely find that many, if not most, say no. In fact, Pew Research found that in the US, atheists constantly express higher levels of concern about climate change than any other group. So what's going on? Well, perhaps lacking any hope that a cosmic being will save the day or that things will right themselves, nihilists are more likely to believe our only hope is to fix things ourselves. Or perhaps, seeing the world as little more than colliding forces, they are more likely to believe that humans can have a genuine effect on the world we live in. If life is going to be a bitch regardless of who you are or what you've come from, if death is inevitable no matter which path you follow, then there is nothing to dictate or limit your actions. That's a frightening thought.
But according to Sartre, there is no design for a human being. No way we have to be. No God to create a purpose for us. No human nature that fixes how we should live. In his 1945 public lecture, Existentialism is a Humanism, he declared that for human beings, existence precedes essence. That is the fundamental tenet of existentialism. I create myself through what I do, the choices I make in a world without fixed values. This makes me, me. I am what I do.
As Jean-Paul Sartre said, man is condemned to be free because once thrown into the world, he is responsible for everything he does. It is up to you to give a meaning. In other words, if there is no point to life, then you have to find your own reason to live. If you're content to fritter your days away, chasing momentary highs and serving your own narrow interests, then good for you. I hope you have fun. If, however, you find that, despite the meaningless of it all, you still find that the suffering of the world weighs heavy on your shoulders, then you are entirely free to spend your life making the world a kinder, gentler place. You won't be doing it because you should, or because you're meant to, or were told to. You will be doing it for no other reason than you genuinely want to.
You only get one shot at life, which is scary. But it also sets you free. If the universe ends in heat death, every humiliation you suffer in your life will be forgotten. Every mistake you made will not matter in the end. Every bad thing you did will be voided. If our life is all we get to experience, then it's the only thing that matters. If the universe has no principles, the only principles relevant are the ones we decide on. If the universe has no purpose, then we get to dictate what its purpose is. We are truly free in a universe-sized playground. So we might as well aim to be happy and to build some kind of utopia in the stars.
Of course, for those of us who are suffering with no means of escape, this existential freedom may be of little comfort or consequence. But if the universe truly is a barren and uncaring place, then that's all the more reason to be good to one another. If life is a bitch to us, that's no reason to be a bitch to each other. And if the only moments of existence that are afforded to us are the moments we're experiencing right now, then we have every reason to make the most of every second. Well, that's it for this week. I hope that any induced existential despair is at least tempered by the existential freedom that comes with it. Indeed, Langston Hughes may have coined the initial phrase, but there's no denying that between his activism, his poetry and writing, he lived a full and vibrant life that saw him having no shortage of things and causes to be passionate about. It may be comforting as well to know that when Langston Hughes first wrote Life's a Bitch, he was recounting the tale of Bricktop, a down and out woman who came to Paris without a penny to her name and took a job managing customers at a struggling nightclub. When she realizes her new employer is as broke as she is, she breaks down sobbing. Langston Hughes' seminal quote reads in full, "Life's a bitch, but you can beat it if you try." True to those words, Langston tells us that this same woman was hosting dukes and princes a few years later. Your life is your own to use, abuse or squander as you see fit. No deus ex machina is going to come down and save you, but there's nothing written into the code of the universe that says you can't save yourself. So with that, I hope you can see the silver lining to this week's phrase, life's a bitch and then you die. And remember that life's a bitch, but you can beat it if you try. 'Cause life's a bitch and then you die. Life's a bitch and then you die. That's why we get high. A huge thank you to our brilliant guest this week for her thoughtful insights and wonderful phrase. Thank you so much, Karen. I hope you've enjoyed listening to Metaphorically Speaking with me, Delia Delore, and that it's given you something to think about for the rest of your day. Let us know what you think about this week's phrase and whether our exploration of nihilism has left you feeling empowered or enfeebled. We would really love to read your thoughts. Don't forget, as well, that you too can suggest a metaphor for future shows by reaching out to us at colourful.com/shows/Delia. And why not send this episode to your friends or leave a review on colourful.com or on our podcast, Metaphorically Speaking, which you can find on Apple, Spotify, and all major streaming platforms. You can also reach us by email, if you prefer, at info@metaphorically-speaking.uk. Your engagement is what drives this show's growth. Join us again for another phrase. Until then, I've been your host, Delia Delore. Have a great week. See you next time. Goodbye.